Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
You know, the reason Trump's most likely going to get reelected is because the Democrats are so busy being absolutely crazy. Watching the State of the Union address the other night, obviously the big news was Nancy Pelosi ripping up the president's speech like a petulant child behind him. And I posted about that on Twitter and had some people were like, responded and said, well, what about the president not shaking her hand? He didn't shake her hand because she tried to attempt a coup. I mean, that's the whole point. The things that the president does, not always couth, as my mom used to call it, most of the time in reaction to something crazy, stupid, and off the wall that the Democrats have done because they can't handle the fact that he actually won the presidential election in 2016. And now, thank goodness, they're going to hand it back to him in 2020. Seriously, I think it's a very high likelihood that he gets reelected, partially because of the Democrats' antics. I mean, they can't even get themselves together to organize a daggum caucus in Iowa. The president goes, here's the thing. Nancy Pelosi tearing up the speech was such a perfect example. When you look at the president's speech, it was fantastic. It was optimistic. It was brimming with American entrepreneurism. It was all about how, look at jobs right now. It's incredible. The economy is absolutely rocking. The economy is on fire. There's every reason to be optimistic. Let me tell you something. The only president, at least in my lifetime, but I imagine probably one of the few ever, to ever win election by pessimism was President Barack Obama. And part of it was the way he was somehow able to package pessimism in an optimistic tone. I don't know. But pessimism at that time was the mood of the country. The mood of the country because of the collapse of the markets in 2007 and 8. So the mood of the country was pessimism. So he came along and said, I can get you out of this. It's time for change. We need to lead from behind. Mediocre is all we're ever going to be. I'll make it as comfortable as possible. That's the only president that in my lifetime, but probably maybe ever, won election by literally pessimism. 99% of the time, pessimism doesn't work. 100% of the time, it doesn't work when the entire country is optimistic. That's what you saw in the State of the Union address, was this weird dichotomy of the Republicans charged up, excited, fired up, jobs, jobs, jobs. And the Democrats are like, we don't like jobs. Tear the speech. Literally, that's what Nancy Pelosi said. I don't want jobs. Jobs suck. Screech. What? What are you doing? Keep doing it. Because we need four more years of this economic awesomeness. I get it. President Trump is a little rough around the edges. He's not exactly presidential, right? I might have in the beginning wanted somebody else that was more presidential. But I'll take these results day after day. Because ultimately, what is it about? It's about the status of America. It's about the ability of each of us to achieve the American dream. If the guy who's helping enable that by getting government out of my way is a little rough around the edges, God bless him. You know, I have a book on my bookshelf that I love to reread every now and then. It's about Lincoln on leadership. And, you know, he put together a team of rivals. And one of the things that the people in his inner circle kept coming to him about was that General Grant was terrible because he was a drinker. And President Lincoln knew that General Grant was the guy who could get the job done. And despite his fallacies and his issues. And at one point, President Lincoln is rumored to have turned around and said to one of the detractors of General Grant and said, if he needs more whiskey, send him more whiskey. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially send it to the front lines. And the point that he was making was that General Grant's a flawed individual, but he's going to get the job done. And that's what we need. President Trump is clearly a flawed individual, But do we need a perfect choir boy in office? Or do we need somebody who's going to do the dirty work of draining the swamp and getting the government out of our way so that Americans can achieve more? And across the board, minorities, everybody is doing better. And that can't be denied. And that's partly why the Democrats are so throwing a temper tantrum right now. But in my opinion, the more they do this, the more disorganized they are. I mean, look at who they're running against this great optimism. A fake Indian woman, a guy whose teeth keep falling out and doesn't know what state he's in it half the time, and a whole bunch of socialists. I mean, it's really kind of comical. So anyway, that's my thoughts on the State of the Union address from a couple nights ago. Our next guest is from the Pegasus Institute, a Kentucky think tank. I love these guys. Josh Crawford is going to join us, and when you think of a think tank, you think of an organization that's kind of like, we're here to talk about policy. These are not that kind of think tank. These guys are young, they're hip to what is relevant in people's lives, and they're all about tools, not just to tell you information that they've gathered, but here's how you can hold our leaders accountable for the information that they've gathered. And they've got a new section of their website up called the Data Dashboard. And what it does is it breaks Kentucky down into various legislative districts, and it tells you the picture of what's happening in those districts economically, law enforcement justice-wise, how many people are having jobs education-wise, how many people are on Medicaid, all these things. And it helps people in each of those districts understand the current situation that they're in, and then they can hold their leaders accountable for those things. And they say that this is the way that Kentucky can move forward, and I agree with them. I'm really excited to have Josh Crawford on the program with us on the Disruption Zone this morning. My friend Josh Crawford from the Pegasus Institute is here with us. We love talking to them. And your new data dashboard on your website, one of the things I love about what you guys do is you don't just provide information, you provide tools, okay? So people can not just see the information and think about it and say, huh, that's interesting, but rather can actually hold leadership accountable for it. Let's start with a broad explanation of what the data dashboard is so people listening know what we're talking about here.
Absolutely, and thanks for having me, Leland. Last year, we debuted our district data sheet. And what those were is essentially what folks will find on the dashboard. We looked at five factors, county-level data factors, average weekly wages, baccalaureate attainment, jail capacity, labor force participation, and percentage of the population on Medicaid. And then we broke it down by legislative district. So every legislator got a breakdown of what their district looked like, and they got a physical piece of paper with that information on it. Well, when we put that out and started to think about doing it again this year, the thought sort of popped into our heads of, why don't we make this more public? A, so that legislators can more easily compare their district to a neighbor or something like that, but so that the public can digest this information and, again, sort of, as you said, hold folks accountable accordingly. From our vantage point, these were five factors that, unless appropriately addressed, Kentucky would never move forward the way we wanted it to. And this year, we actually added a sixth factor, which is full-time local law enforcement officers per 1,000 residents. And so that's sort of the genesis of the project, and now it's available for everybody to see. Everybody can see every district, every county, and compare it.
When you look at this, it really shows us what an issue we've got in the eastern part of the state in terms of poverty, unemployment, et cetera. I was just... looking at Martin County and Pike County, for instance, just in Martin County, just 36% of the population is participating in the workforce. Because that when you get that level, that's not because you have, 74% of the people or 64% of the people are lazy. That's not the problem. The problem is there aren't any jobs.
Right.
And then you look at Pike County, very similar numbers when it comes to participation in the employment, but then also you look at the jail and it's 123% capacity, which, by the way, is the average statewide. So we have a problem here. And where there's poverty, there's crime. Where there's not economic opportunity, there's poverty. How do you hold those legislators? I mean, you know, a Pike County legislator can't just go to Frankfort and say, damn it, give us jobs, right? I mean, there's a systemic issue in certain parts of the state due to what the economy has been built on and how it's not built on that anymore, coal. How do we fix this?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how a lot of these factors align. So high jail population, low labor force participation rate, low baccalaureate attainment, high percentage of the population on Medicaid, low officers per 1,000 residents. The communities that are struggling in all of these factors. And one of the things that, is the benefit to data like this is there's not an inherent solution to it when we put it out, right? We don't put it out to say this is necessarily what you have to do about X, Y, and Z. A liberal can look at this data the same way a conservative can and should theoretically have a set of solutions for this. But as far as some of those particularly struggling counties and districts go, and especially in the economic space, it's pretty clear to us that creating a sort of statewide strong business environment is the single best thing that the state can do for not only those areas, but the state as a whole.
Right.
If you look at the map as a whole, you'll tend to find that the higher the baccalaureate attainment, the higher the average weekly wages, which makes sense, right?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
College degrees on average earn more money. The most interesting spaces for me are areas where baccalaureate attainment is at about state average, but they have higher than average weekly wages. And that tends to be because there's some sort of flagship employer in that area, steel mill, the Georgetown Toyota factory. Some of these other areas sort of have these flagship businesses that end up lifting up wages and creating all these ancillary jobs because people have money from those jobs. And so creating a business environment in which folks want to move here and can sort of prop up some of these communities. And the key to that, especially in some of the more rural parts of the state, is the county seat and having a strong county seat in these counties so that there's a place where folks can engage in commerce and businesses want to come. And some of these, whether it be manufacturers or other industries, are interested in locating.
Let me kind of take a broad view of this for a second, because I really have a lot of passion and deep love for Eastern Kentucky. And I get, you know, it bothers me that nationally Kentucky is made fun of. In fact, I have a friend who lives in Malibu, California, and we spar back and forth. She's very liberal, and we spar back and forth sometimes. But she sent me a picture the other day of, I guess, in Ventura, California, which is kind of between Malibu and I think Santa Barbara. It's between two very wealthy areas, and it's a little more, believe it or not, in California, blue collar. That doesn't happen very often, but They have a T-shirt that the people in Ventura like to wear that's kind of a source of local pride, but also kind of a ding at us. They call it Ventucky. And, you know, the idea is, you know, we're blue-collar rednecks, white trash, whatever you want to call it. And I just, you know, it's funny, and I'm not offended by it, but at the same time, it offends me. You know what I mean? It's like, wait a minute. There's so much that the bluegrass state has to offer the world. And, you know, bourbon has helped us kind of get on the map, and horse racing, of course. And so now, you know, it's not as often that people immediately wonder if we wear shoes when we go out in public. But there's still that thing in the back of people's minds that says, ah, it's Kentucky, you know. And I really want, I have this passion that there's so much resources in the state. The people, if you've ever been down to Eastern Kentucky, I know you have, the people there are some of the most amazing people you have ever met in your life. Hospitable, loving, welcoming. You know, it has its problems and its warts, but it's an interesting and awesome area. I don't know, economic zones that Senator Rand Paul has championed, where maybe we could encourage tourism in those areas by saying, hey, you know, open a business in this part of Kentucky and it's tax-free for 10 years. With the growing elk population, there's new wildlife types of entrepreneurial things that people could pursue, like, you know, guides to see the elk or hunting guides and various different things. I don't know. What are your thoughts on maybe some sort of concerted economic efforts in those areas to replace coal? Hemp? I mean, apparently, my understanding is it grows incredibly well on those hillsides. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, so I'll say one thing first, because I'm not originally from Kentucky. I moved here 4 years ago when we started Pegasus.
You got here as fast as you could?
Exactly. and I think I had some of those stereotypes sort of in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. And in living here and in interacting with folks all over the state, but especially in the southeastern part of the state, you come to realize that men, and it was primarily men, in eastern Kentucky, did one of the bravest things that you can imagine. They went down into dark, deep mm-hmm. holes and powered the world for generations.
Yeah.
You know, there is sort of this stereotype that you talk to about these sort of like bumpkins. But the reality is the men in that area took on the task of powering prosperity all over the globe for generations. And a lot of those skills that were accumulated over that time translate really well into other industries. And so whether that means that those industries come to eastern Kentucky, or for some of those folks that means leaving home and going to other parts of the state to work in those industries, there's a talent pool there that is really kind of being untapped right now.
Yeah,
and I
agree.
Do think that the answer is both. Mm-hmm. For some folks, it means having to leave where you grew up and where your family grew up. But for others, I do think that there is industry potential in that part of the state. I don't know the agricultural backing of the ability to grow hemp in that part of the state, mm-hmm. but I know that hemp has been a boom for the state overall.
Yeah.
And if there is an opportunity to grow that there, I think that is a growth industry for Kentucky. I think it's a space where Kentucky gets to be a leader, which is a position that in the policy space we don't often find ourselves.
Right.
And so I'd be all for that. And I do think that there is, when you talk about opportunity zones, economic freedom zones, things like that, a lot of the attention tends to get focused on poor urban neighborhoods, as it should. But I think that those policies that can benefit those neighborhoods are equally viable in some of the struggling rural communities in our state.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, you have West Louisville and you have Eastern Kentucky, and you could take those two. And if a business that wanted that hardworking, you know, pool of workers with a set of skills that, you know, it's not those workers' fault that there's cleaner coal that's easier to get to out west now. You know what I mean? It's
right.
not their fault. They still have that same set of skills, and they still work just as hard as they did. It's not their fault that the previous president spent 8 years trying to shut them down and was quite successful. It's not their fault that, you know, natural gas is now being used at a higher rate than it ever has before. So, but yet they do have those skill sets. I don't know. I see those two areas of the state as areas where if you set up those economic opportunity zones, businesses would be dumb not to set up shop there. You know, Pikeville's becoming quite the population center, and if we could just get a little bit more infrastructure in and out of there, it would be quite easy. And frankly, most of the infrastructure in and out of there needs to go to the east instead of coming back into Kentucky. It's pretty easy to get to Pikeville now. It's how do you get from Pikeville over the mountains to Virginia and to the East Coast, et cetera, with products and goods that you might manufacture in eastern Kentucky?
Right, absolutely. And that really is one of the keys, is developing centers of commerce like that, and Pikeville is a perfect place to start.
Let's back out and talk about a couple of other issues. Medicaid. When you look at some of these, I've got your dashboard up in front of me right now. We're talking with Josh Crawford, the Pegasus Institute. Statewide, 30% of people are on Medicaid. That's a staggering number in and of itself. But you go to places like Lawrence County, Martin County, Pike County, we're talking above 40%. Above 40%, close to 50% of the people on Medicaid. And as you know, Medicaid is basically when you can't afford anything else, that's the crap government coverage that you get for healthcare. And it's incredibly expensive to the taxpayers as a state. These two things that we're talking about, employment and Medicaid, are deeply tied together.
Absolutely. And, you know, part of that number is reflected in expansion. That when you take away some of the additional requirements that Medicaid had had in the past.
Yeah. The last governor with the Medicaid work requirements, which were brilliant, smart, and fair.
Correct. And simply say, if you're below X percentage of the poverty line, you're Medicaid eligible. That's sort of how you see those explosions.
Right.
And for better or worse, the American people have taken on the task of health care for the very sick, the very poor, children, pregnant mothers, things like that. Mm-hmm. And the reality there, though, is that the goal of those programs should always be to get folks off of them.
Right.
President Trump got a very partisan round of applause last night for, among other things, a statement about reducing food stamp recipients.
Right.
And the goal with any of these programs should be to give people what they need in the moment with the goal of ultimately moving them off these programs.
And by the way, let me just pause you there for a second. I don't want to interrupt, but I want to pause you there because I think that the visual of that, what you just described, the partisan applause for getting people off of food stamps is exactly a personification of the difference between the two major parties in our country right now. One party, I don't know if they see it or not, but they cheer people's dependence on government. They loathe people's independence from it. I don't think you can get a better snapshot of the dichotomy between the left and right in America today. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just want to point that out because I think you bring up an interesting point. We should be cheering people becoming independent of government, and yet we have this tendency and this trend right now in our nation, especially with younger people, towards more dependence on government. And it's a terrifying thought.
Absolutely. And so the Medicaid, in some ways, because of the eligibility requirements or lack of eligibility requirements through expansion, is a pretty good metric of these kinds of things. And so we've done this for 2 years in a row now. We're going to do it going forward. And the hope is to see those numbers decrease year over year.
Right.
Unfortunately, we haven't seen that happen so far. But again, it's something that legislators need to be aware of because there's obviously a huge financial cost to the state and a growing financial cost to the state because of the percentage that the federal government pays versus the percentage that the state will eventually have to pay. Mm-hmm. But from sort of a human dignity standpoint, we want to get people off of the government rolls, not because we're cruel and we want to kick them to the curb, but we want them to be self-sufficient.
Right. That makes sense. Looking at wages now. You look at those coal counties, Martin Pike, up close to the statewide average, which is $920 a week. You know, it's pretty close to $4,000 a month. It's not a horrible wage. But in those, and you see in those coal counties, that number's pretty close to that statewide average, which means if you are working, you've got a good shot at making good money, but there's a lot of people laid off. But then in some of those other Eastern Kentucky counties, the number's closer to half the statewide average. So one of the things we got to do, and we're talking about Eastern Kentucky specifically, and I don't want to focus all of this conversation on that, but the economic opportunity there has to be a lot better than it is now. It has to be closer to equal to what's in the rest of the state because it's not just about having people have a job. They got to make enough money to live. And, of course, the left's answer to this is always to raise minimum wage, which doesn't do anything but shut down businesses in those poor and impoverished areas anyway.
Right, which, of course, the average weekly wage is already well above minimum wage in all of those areas.
Right.
So it's not as if
I think even like in Elliott County is $5.95 a week. That's still $25,000 to $26,000 a year. That's not a lot of money, but it's more minimum wage.
Right. This to me was one of the things that was most interesting because we often talk about this state in terms of the Golden Triangle, Louisville, Lexington,
yep.
Northern Kentucky, West Kentucky, East Kentucky, and then sort of South Central Kentucky.
Right.
But on this statistic in particular and on the Medicaid population statistic, counties varied wildly that were right next to each other. And so to think of the East monolithically, especially in this context, is a mistake because you have some of those counties where the average weekly wage is at about state average, and then you have those that are about half, and they're right next to each other, if not a county in between them.
Your perfect example of that is Pikeville. Pikeville has there's a neighborhood in Pikeville. It's literally one of the richest neighborhoods in America. It's the highest concentration of millionaires in one neighborhood in the United States. And that's such a dichotomy for what you see driving into Pikeville. You know, I mean, it's a perfect example of that. Right next to this is that, you know?
Right. Right. Absolutely. And so, again, I think it helps legislators and it helps advocates think about this question as the regions of the state not being as monolithic as we've perhaps thought about them before.
So where do you see all of this going? You know, the Pegasus Institute, your goal here with the data dashboard is so that everybody who's listening to this right now can go and look at the district in which they live, look at these statistics. Look at, you know, is your jail overpopulated? Do you have enough police officers for safety? Are your weekly wages, you know, do you have economic opportunity? Is there educational opportunity? Are people able to find jobs? Are we able to get people off Medicaid and onto some real health insurance? That kind of thing. And then hold their local leaders responsible, maybe as much their local magistrates as their state representative and senator. But where do you see this going? What's your hope for this? If people can see this information and go and say, why is it this way? Why is our county this way and the county next to us isn't? You know, is that the goal here? And if people just start asking questions, it prompts legislators to act. But, you know, we also have to remember that some legislators will act in ways that, you know, are only going to exacerbate this problem. So what's your goal? What do you want to see happen here?
Right. There's sort of internal and external goals here, right? The external goal is a lot of what you said. For folks to look at this to say, wait a minute, I don't want my home county to be in the bottom X percentage of the state when it comes to average weekly wages and baccalaureate attainment. I'm going to call my representative and senator about that.
Right.
The internal goal is that these data points are our North Star for research moving forward. And so everything we do will be to try to address these data points. And
right.
So in the economic space, it means reducing barriers to entry to the workforce and creating a better business environment.
Yeah.
For baccalaureate attainment, it means improving K-12 education through changes to curriculum, but also through choice options. It also means that the path through which you obtain a bachelor's degree needs to be in line with the way that people acquire those today.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that if you go to work for a couple of years after high school and then you get an associate's degree and then you work for a couple more years, you want to be able to turn around and have that person be able to obtain a bachelor's degree
right.
without having to do four more years of education.
Right, right.
So there's those kinds of things. In the jail crowding space, it's about getting that problem under control. It's a uniquely Kentucky problem. All over the country, there are criminal justice questions and crowding questions, but jail crowding is a uniquely Kentucky problem. There's only one other state that has that problem like we do. And then in the local law enforcement officers per capita question, the thing that sticks out about that, and as people click around on the dashboard, they'll see this, is the number of statistical 0.0s. I mean, that stood out to us in a big way. And so it's full-time local police officers per 1,000 residents.
Mm.
And so if you have a statistical 0.0, that means one of two things is happening. Either you're policed entirely by part-time law enforcement, or you're policed entirely by the state police or some combination of the two.
Right.
And that's the case.
Example, what you're saying here, Elliott, Lawrence, Martin, Morgan, and Pike County all have less than one. Three of those counties I just named have zero.
Right. And so if the state police are going to be the primary police agency in a local area, then they need to be funded and equipped accordingly.
Right.
Our state police have sort of never been as small in number as they are right now,
mm-hmm.
Certainly on a per capita basis.
Yeah.
And so if the state police are going to be the primary law enforcement agency in large swaths of this state, then they need to be budgeted and equipped accordingly.
A couple other things here before we wrap up our conversation. First of all, why do you do what you do?
So before I joined Pegasus, I was a prosecutor. And when you're a prosecutor, you learn early on that your cases fall into a couple of sort of neat categories. You have what former Attorney General Jeff Sessions used to refer to as the super predators. These are people that we build prisons for. They're the bad of the bad. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got the person who made the true mistake, the guy who gets a public intoxication charge after the UK basketball game. Getting the citation and going through the criminal justice process is enough to scare him out of ever doing it again. In the middle, you have a large swath of people who are not the super predator, but also didn't make a mistake. They knew what they were doing. They've got some underlying issue, whether it be anger management issues or substance abuse issues or something else.
Or maybe they made the mistake and then went down the rabbit hole.
Right. And then the final category of people you have is the people who follow behind one of those first three groups of people. they're not the primary actors, but they like being a part of the scene, and they find themselves in circumstances that they otherwise wouldn't. And so you treat your caseloads that way. You sort of triage that way. In the criminal justice policy space, the same is true. And so to take that reality that I experienced as a practitioner and apply it to the criminal justice policy space, now as executive director for the whole organization and overseeing sort of all the policy spaces, again, applying that to education policy and economic policy, bridging the gap between academic quality research, the research that's done in universities, and the problems of the day that are faced in Frankfurt and before Louisville Metro Council and before other decision makers all over the state. And so that's really interesting to me academically, but I also, you know, I didn't grow up as somebody who was particularly well off financially. You know, like we never went hungry, but I saw my parents struggle and claw. And my father's a blue collar worker. He's a painting contractor. And when the recession hit in 2008, he was very quickly out of work. Mm-hmm. And I saw him do everything from demolition work to pump gas to put food on the table for us.
Right.
And so understanding that work ethic and understanding what it's like for people to really grind to try to make ends meet makes me want to try to create a better environment for that kind of work.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. And I love what I love the work that Pegasus does because it's not partisan. And, you know, Democrats and Republicans can both go use this tool and they can look at, and if we can just get them talking about the right things, we have a better shot of the right solutions coming out. You know, it may not be everything I want and everything you want and everything they want, but if they're talking about the right problems, at least, you know, we're at least moving in the right direction. And I think when you and I were talking about this before, the goal here is you have to understand your situation before you can move out of it. And if you don't understand you don't understand the challenges that are around you, you can't surmount those challenges. And that's what I see this data dashboard is doing, helping us to understand the challenges. It's interesting. I'm just kind of perusing this while we're talking, multitasking here. And there's a picture emerging that should be unacceptable to every Kentuckian. You look at the western part of the state, and by and large, wages are high. Policing is on par with where it should be. Education is high. Labor force participation is high. And Medicaid percentage as a total of the state is low. You look at the eastern part of the state, and it's the opposite. We should look at this as a problem, and we should all be focusing on how do we fix that, you know. So anyway, there's interesting stuff in this. I hope people will use this tool. You can go to PegasusKentucky.org, and right now you guys have a pop-up that will immediately come forward on the page, and you can click on that and go right to all of this. After that, I'm sure you'll also have a way that people can get to it, but your website's very useful, and I encourage people to get to it. Thank you guys for what you do.
Thank you, Leland. I appreciate it.
It's good to have you on. Let's continue the conversation. Josh Crawford, the Pegasus Institute. Go to PegasusKentucky.org for more. All right, so many more episodes to come. We've got some big stuff in the pipeline, folks. Some really major guests that we're working to get on the schedule. I've got episodes about what is really going on in Iran. We've got episodes about legalizing marijuana. We've got episodes about ministries that are ministering in love by providing jobs to people who are coming out of prison and need to get that first step up. There's just so much great stuff to talk about, and that's all coming up on the Disruption Zone. I want to thank folks that helped make this possible. Of course, Cameron Mills with us as often as he can be. Dynamics Productions in Lexington, dxaudio.com. If you want to know more, they've got a great production facility. They help us with music and production value and all of that on the Disruption Zone. So many thanks to them. And again, just download us. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're also on Google Play. Those subscriptions are free. You can also check it out on the website at www.thedisruptionzone.com. I'm on Twitter at Leland Show, Zone Disruption on Twitter, Instagram at Great Lelando, and The Disruption Zone, and of course on Facebook under Leland Conway and The Disruption Zone. So check it out on The Disruption Zone.